Petitioner been fleeing. Before I address Barajas and the withholding claim, at the outset, it's critical that there was no adverse credibility finding here. So we accept Mr. Fang's testimony as true. And his undisputed testimony requires four key conclusions. One, Mr. Fang expressed anti-corruption political beliefs. He opposed corruption, he refused to participate in the fake toll receipt scheme, and he reported the general manager's corruption to Superintendent Chen, the highest official at the state-owned highway department. Two, Chen's corruption investigation was a sham. Chen told Fang that he would investigate, and before Fang heard anything, he was fired. And then when Mr. Fang went back to the superintendent to follow up on the investigation, the superintendent told him that the investigation found that Mr. Fang was corrupt. Three, Chen summoned the police to arrest Mr. Fang on false charges of assault and embezzlement only after Mr. Fang went back to follow up on the investigation, even after being fired.
And after refusing to leave the man's office, right? And isn't that one of the facts that the BIA relied on?
The BIA did say that he refused to leave Superintendent Chen's office, but that does not preclude a finding that his anti-corruption political beliefs, which he continued to express during that meeting, also was one central reason for his persecution.
Well, that's just kind of a little bit of the text system. When you pull all the facts down, isn't it really that as far as saying, and then I have an idea with that Mr. Fang's show a nexus between his anti-corruption beliefs and the acts of those who he says were his persecutors?
That was the finding below, Your Honor, but the record compels the conclusion that his political opinion was, in fact, at least one central reason for his persecution. Really, nothing else explains what happened to him.
Right, but that's why I was going back to the fact that the police, she really called the police after your client refused to leave. So, well, I mean, it seems like if your client had just showed up, complained, and then left without causing the scene, there might not have ever been any basis for his assertion of persecution, right? Because he would never have been arrested, he would never have been killed, et cetera.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, the refusal to leave the office, that Superintendent Chen's reaction would be a massive overreaction if all it was his refusal to leave the office. There has to be something more going on here. He summoned the police to arrest him and charged him not only with the false charge of embezzlement, but accused him of assaulting
the superintendent. Stuff that would show that the police are acting at the direction of the supervisor based on the corruption that your client was complaining of. The worst police are reacting to a police call, alleged some violation, and they are acting out of that. Is there any showing here in the record as to their being directed for corruption purposes by the supervisor?
Well, the superintendent is either trying to cover up the corruption or protecting the general manager. The superintendent is suppressing his political opinion because he views Mr. Fang as a threat, and so he invokes the power of the police to suppress that opinion. And so it doesn't really matter what the police believe. They are acting on the direction of superintendent to persecute Mr. Fang for his political opinion. And in any event, Mr. Fang did tell the police that he was not, in fact, corrupt, that he was being framed because he had reported the corruption, was trying to expose the superintendent. The police then defended the superintendent and said, "You're just trying to make trouble," and persisted in beating him. And those facts are very similar to those at issue in Hugh v. Holder, which is more found in Nexus Satisfied in a post-Real ID Act case, applying the one central reason standard.
Well, that case has to do with there's a clear direction by the persecutors to the third party. I guess in this situation, it would be the police. The police are acting for the supervisors, what you're arguing.
Yes, that's how they're connected.
Okay. So, how do you get past the problem, though? Well, the police have to have some knowledge. Unless it's clearly shown they're acting directly in the direction of the persecutors. Because I don't see here how you separate the police. The police is normal. Follow through on a crime as alleged by someone in their peculiar knowledge that I think they would have to show that they're acting in the direction for the corrupt purpose. That's the case that you are.
Well, Your Honor, again, the superintendent is the one who is behind all of this. And if an ordinary citizen called the police and said, "I think this guy is committing corruption," that would be cool. That would be helpful to see the receipt. He was interrogated and beaten until he was forced to confess, not only to embezzlement, but also to this false assault charge. Police persisted in harassing him and then his family even after he left China for several years. again, the police did know his opinion because he expressed his anti-corruption beliefs again, and the police indicated their inclination to protect the superintendent from these false charges, or from the charges. If there are no further questions on the asylum point, I'd like to briefly address the withholding claim. The one central reason standard does not apply to Mr. Fink's withholding claim. As this court held in Barajas, the less demanding a reason standard applies. And he clearly satisfies the less demanding a reason standard, even if he does not satisfy the one central reason standard.
Can you respond to the argument that the government is making in its 28-J letter? I guess, well, you've got a better sense of the argument than I do, but they made it across a number of cases we have on the calendar this sitting, so I'd like to hear your response to that.
Of course, Your Honor. So the government argues that the unreason standard only applies to mixed motives claims based on the Barajas decision's distinguishing of Zatino. But all that Barajas was doing is explaining why Zatino did not make a distinction between the two standards. There simply wasn't any reason to do so. And there given the facts there. And there can't be a different standard for different withholding claims. Barajas is based on an interpretation of the withholding statute, which applies to all claims. And in any event, the government's argument assumes that Barajas came out differently. In Barajas itself, the agency there found that there was no evidence of an access, yet Barajas still remanded to the agency to apply the unreason standard.
But you can understand the logic, I think, of the government's argument, can't you? I mean, let's say the BIA had just said, this isn't even a close case. The only reason this alleged persecutor did X or Y had nothing to do with any kind of protected ground. Right. And that was the basis of his finding. It would seem silly to send it back to the agency to apply this any reason standard. One, the agency's already made clear that, no, that it was, there was no sense in which the basis for the persecution was connected to a protected ground. Why would he waste our time sending it back to the agency? I think that's what the government is arguing here.
I think so, Your Honor. But first of all, even if the agency assumes that the one central reason standard applies, we still have to remand because under Ventura, we can't assume what the agency would have concluded if it had applied the correct standard. And again, Barajas himself, both the IJ and the BIA there, concluded that there was no nexus, that there was no evidence, and that the sole reason was they were going after him for money. And so they remanded so that the agency could consider the facts under the reason standard. I'd like to reserve my writing time.
Yes. That sounds good. Why don't we hear from the government?
May it please the court. Good morning. I am Tracy McDonald from the United States Department of Justice's Office of Immigration Litigation, and I represent the Attorney General Jefferson Sessions III. Petitioner in this case claims to have established a nexus to an enumerated ground to be granted asylum. However, in light of his testimony, relevant case law, and other record evidence, the petitioner's claims are without merit. The petitioner's claims have been heard and rejected by DHS, an immigration judge, and the board. This court should find that substantial evidence supports the board's determination that the petitioner failed to meet his burden of proof for asylum. Petitioner fails to establish a nexus between his alleged harm and a protected ground.
Well, Counselor, the argument from the appellant indicating that this, at least this situation, who I guess would be the persecutors from Mr. Frank's point of view, was acting at the direction of the superintendent of supervisor. So, does that make the nexus as he argues?
The government would argue that the record evidence does not compel a finding that a petitioner was harmed on account of his anti-corruption beliefs.
But he said that I'm not going to accept these bribes, I'm not going to participate in these fake tokens. This is awful for the government to be engaged in this type of conduct. I don't have any part of it. In fact, even when given an opportunity to think it over, overnight, he declined further. And what he found out that he suffered was because he wouldn't go along with his scheme. Is that correct?
Correct. The government would argue that the retaliation against Petitioner was because he refused to participate in the embezzlement scheme, and he refused to leave the superintendent's office.
So you make a distinction between his actions in response to the scheme and his criticism of the corruption?
Yes. Petitioner's refusal to participate in the embezzlement scheme is what motivated the retaliation. I guess we can't know what was in his mind, but just according to the record, there's no record evidence that Petitioner ever spoke out against the corruption to anyone or was He refused to participate in the embezzlement scheme, yes.
Right, but it wasn't the basis for that. His political view that corruption is terrible, I'm completely against it, and not only would I never participate in it, but I think it's a bad idea for anyone in our government to participate in it.
The government would argue that there's a distinction between the two, that his refusal to participate in the embezzlement scheme does not.
Okay, I hear you. That's a really fine distinction to begin with, but all I'm asking is what substantial evidence in the record supports the BIA's determination that, in fact, it was the refusal to participate in the corruption scheme that was what was in Shin's mind when he called the police? What basis do you have for arguing that that's the right inference to draw?
Well, as the board pointed out, their decision in the matter of NM is contrary to the Holocaust case. In that case, the board held that a showing of retaliatory harm for exposing acts of corruption, coupled with evidence that the corruption is in some way related to a political system, is not sufficient to show that a victim's anti-corruption beliefs are one central reason for the persecution. The Supreme Court in Elias Zacharias stated that it's insufficient that the persecutor acts from a generalized political motive, and the alien must show that the persecutor may harm or did harm him because of the alien's political opinion. And the government would argue that there is no evidence to prove that the retaliation against the petitioner was solely based on his refusal to participate in the embezzlement scheme.
Well, what do you think was the basis of his being sent to jail and his being arrested?
For his refusal to leave the superintendent's office.
So you disagree then that this was a scheme to get him arrested, so to speak, by the Mr. Chin? In other words, if he's Mr. Chin, by the record of arresting him, and having him arrested because he's some misconduct, or is it the scheme that the appellant is arguing that it's really because he's not going along this corruption that he's complaining about it, and they're acting for Mr. Chin, the superintendent? So I want your views on that. How is it that the police are not acting on behalf of the corrupt supervisor?
As the board held in this case, the petitioner did not establish that his supervisor's embezzlement scheme was connected to high level or overall corruption. Furthermore, the retaliation against the petitioner arose from his refusal to cooperate in the embezzlement scheme and for his refusal to leave the superintendent's office, not from his anti-corruption beliefs. And that's what.
But does the court have to accept Mr. Fang's representations? We're somewhat bound to take his view of what happened, what he says he had.
The court is bound by what the record compels. The government would argue that the record evidence compels or does not compel a decision that the petitioner is able to establish a nexus.
Well, what is the record evidence other than what Mr. Fang said? what happened. Is there other written evidence other than his view? If there's not, what is the basis for the finding of the case? What I'm getting at is if we're not bound to somewhat accept the record as Mr. Fain says this, the things that happen is why I am the victim of persecution. I'm not afraid to go back. And the record's based on his representations, right? If they are, then I think the court is not required to take his view into account.
Yes, that's
right. You say your responsibility was that when the record supports that finding to the contrary. So I'm asking, besides Mr. Fain's representations, what other evidence do we have to determine what happened between the police and the supervisor?
Well, we have what Mr. Fain, what the superintendent, I guess, told the authorities when he called.
But all this is coming from Mr. Fain, right?
Yeah, correct.
I'm asking, so how does the board determine how to weigh Mr. Fain's representations? So did you say that it's overwhelmingly supported by the record?
Well, the record evidence is all that can be considered. So.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, and I'm not trying to split hands with you, but I'm trying to get you to tell me what of what Mr. Fain says, what is the record evidence that supports the view? This is a proposal, as opposed to the view of interpretation that's put out by the Senate bill. The government said, the supervisor, Mr. Senator, I think it was,
yes.
He's the person who's directing all this. He had the police beating up Mr. Fain because of his corruption. And the government's position is that it's because of his refusal to participate in the scheme,
right.
And not because of his complaints of whistleblower. So I'm saying, how does the government seize the facts that he represented, that he presented, to support that version as opposed to the version that the government
is seeking? Based on, as I spoke on earlier, the board's decision in matter of NM are closely related, and I believe that in that case, the board held that a showing of retaliatory harm coupled with a generalized political motive is not enough to show that the victim's anti-corruption beliefs was one central reason for the persecution. So, just like in that case, the petitioner in this case never expressed a political opinion. He just refused to participate in the local level investment scheme.
So your time is up, but I wanted to ask, do you have anything to add to your 28-J letter on the withholding claim?
I would just point out that the petitioner failed to exhaust his claim for withholding, and that Barajas definitely applies to his asylum claim. But as far as withholding of removal, I don't have anything to add to what was in the 28-J, but I just wanted to point out that petitioner's case was for asylum, and Barajas does apply to asylum.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks. And I'm sorry, Judge Gould, I should have asked, did you have any further questions for my counsel?
No, I don't. I have no questions.
Great.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to first start out by addressing the assertions with respect to the matter of NM. All matter of NM says is that you can't automatically equate retaliation after exposing government corruption. You need something more. Because you can't always assume that they're opposing government corruption for political reasons versus self-interested reasons, and you can't always assume that the persecutor is acting because of the political opinion, because you don't even know if the persecutor necessarily knows the political opinion. But here we have facts that not only does podium in opposition to corruption and its negative effects on the economy, but Mr. Superintendent Chen was aware of those political beliefs because Mr. Fang repeatedly expressed them to him. So this is distinguishable from Matter of MM and the reasoning rejected by the One Central Reason standard. I'd also like to
address... Counsel, Judge Gould, if I can interject.
Of course.
Question, how do we know that the statements your client made were expressions of political belief as opposed to just expressions that he wouldn't go along with the scheme?
Well, Your Honor, he opposed the corruption not just when he was still employed and refusing to go along with the scheme, but even after he was fired and he learned the scheme was ongoing, he went back to the superintendent's office to demand why nothing had been done and explained again to the superintendent that he opposed corruption because it would have a really heavy blow, as he said, on China's economy. And so he's not acting out of, you know, his reasons for opposing corruption transcend self-interest and purely personal reasons.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'd like to also briefly address the fact that the BIA's finding that he never spoke out against corruption to anyone. That's clearly contrary to the record, because Mr. Fang, in fact, testified that he opposed corruption not only to his supervisor, but to the superintendent. So at the very least, that finding on which the BIA based its decision requires remand for the BIA to consider the record in light of Mr. Fang's undisputed testimony.
Okay.
So we'll have nothing further.
Thanks very much. The case just argued will be submitted. And Ms. Barker, we'd like to thank you and your firm for being willing to undertake this representation. We depend on counsel such as yourself to step in. I can't remember, I don't think you were the original lawyer appointed. Yes, well, we're delighted that you came and had this, this opportunity to argue before us. You did a terrific job as the incoming counsel. This is the case just starting to be submitted.